Blog Talk Radio.
Out there in the ether. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you here today. I think we're into something more compelling about the order. It's going to put some questions to you that I think you're more than capable of answering. And we're going to continue on with this summertime version. This is the 31st of July, 2016. It's actually the 213th day of the year, so our year is moving along very nicely. We only have 153 days left to celebrate and to grasp the meaning of life each and every day. Yes, we're being unabashedly frank about that. It's important to move forward with a sense of commitment and a sense of self-awareness so that we don't continue to inconvenience other people. It means that we need to have some sense of a purpose and way of organizing our thinking. Thank goodness to the philosophers for doing that. Today, excuse me, we're going to be talking about the commentary today is on distinctiveness and what master we serve. And this came to mind when I was thinking about the changes that have happened in our contemporary in our cultures. We may think and believe that we can't we haven't changed at all, but I think we've changed greatly. Anyway, we're going to start off with a little tune here that I think you're going to like by Leon Redbone. It's an old Fats Waller tune, Ain't Misbehaving.
I'm through with pleasure, just you and me. Jack Horner in the corner. Don't go nowhere. Why do I care? Your kisses I was waiting for. Believe me, I don't stay out late. Don't care to go. I'm home about it, just me and my baby. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Show. Lovely. Distinctiveness. Here. I'm going to talk to you about the whys and the hows and see if this makes sense and let me know. Does the true Mason approach his world with an open mind? Let's say we are Masons with an engineer's mind. So we don't talk about the emotion of the event. How do you feel about it? We talk about what was that like? Well, the meal was good. The agenda was full. The speakers were really excellent. What was it like? It was wonderful. It was warm. It was compassionate. Do you see the difference in the way we approach things? Our worldview is not singular. It's varies considerably. There are people in the world that have a sense of the world as mathematics, and there are people that have a sense as a connection, an emotional connection, a way of reading the effect of the environment and our circumstance on our person. And one, it depends on the situation. But when we connect as human beings, we connect on an emotional level, because we're reading emotion is what gives meaning to the context, always. So that comes through tone of voice, expression, what's said and what isn't said. Does the true Mason approach his world with an open mind? Mark Twain told us, whenever you find yourself on the side of the majority, time to pause and reflect. Isn't that a sly way to address contrarianism? You know, the person that, if you, no matter what the issue is, they will take a contrary position. Oh, you've met them. Black is white, up is down, out is in. Keep this in mind when you next think of Masonry. Is this somehow mixed into the appeal that has always held us in the palm of its hand? Of this very old fraternal order? Quixotic? Can you imagine the grief Don Quixote had to tolerate? Cervantes' work. Mm-hmm. the old man that resurrected the nobility of knighthood to fight for the honor and protect the honor of the fair damsel with his minion beside him, faithful to a fault, knowing that the old fellow was considered and sounded very delusional. The quest to protect the honor of a woman that was transitional. She varied from time to time. It's different women, always in that role of the fair maiden. And him compelled by honor to fight on valiantly, to fight windmills, quixotic. Can you imagine the grief he had to tolerate when he told his friends he was writing a story about an old man on a journey, horse and donkey and servant, traveling on a quest to rescue the fair damsel? Imagine, how do you think Cervantes was respected? How do you think that went over? Remember, there wasn't novels at the time. These stories, this is one of the very first stories of its type ever written. We take those things as commonplace. We take it for granted. We deal with these things with a tremendous amount of indifference. But that brings, an interesting point of view about the mason and open-mindedness. I think today we want to understand how important it is that any one way of approaching knowledge and exchange of information and entertainment is transitory. There will be some, and we still hear them, people that have developed tastes. Well, that takes a while. Some develop tastes at a fairly early age, and some take time. As they mature, they find things that appeal to them. Remember, when you really are, when a mason, the true mason, is expressing his own thought, is when he is saying it, not parroting something that somebody else has told him. One of the fellows out there that reminded me that, it, as he said when I was feeling quite ill, it sucks to be you. Well, it was a little wake-up call that from his the meagerness of that expression and the intemperance of it was just that. It was very fleeting, very temporary. Not only those types of comments and feedback, our perspective on many things changes according to the context, according to the audience. And many people willingly will, and almost blindly, say things that they think, that they assume other people want to hear. Yeah. Oh, we hear that with the off-color joke, with we'll just put it down as a lack of good manners and taste. Thinking that it's quite appropriate and will be accepted. The true mason may laugh at the joke, may go on and be complicit with the conversation, while at the same time knowing that it is less than what it should be, aware of the context. We are of an era when the temporary is considered the consistent. We have been subjected to hundreds of thousands of sound bites. And we sit passively listening to a sound bite talk about events of history and events of trivia because they're brought to us by particular media it gives a currency. It ascribes a currency to things that may or may not be valuable, may or may not be valid, may or may not be useful. But when we watch these and listen to these events, of course, we're going to be trained by the short-term encapsulation of stories. How can we string stories along when we're being so reactive? It's as if a pinprick is our reaction to a pinprick. It reveals the emotion and the importance of an event. The marketing, the notion of neutrality, of a neutral report, is a fallacy. Most all media, it has a primary purpose of making a profit while conveying news. And the line has been blurred, as you and I know, between news and entertainment, to the point where it's very difficult to distinguish the two anymore. Very, very difficult. And the way that news is portrayed puts a particular spin on it that the producers have interpreted for us about the events of the world. Quixotic. He had a particular spin about the world around and the need to revive or cling to the honor that he felt was being lost over the course of his life. And out of context, he sounded quite delusional. Nothing wrong when we examine the merit of fighting for the honor of the damsel, except it's wrong-minded when you apply it out of time. Because our cultures have continued to evolve, not with any necessary purpose. The evolution has occurred because of multivarious factors, some of them beyond our immediate contemplation, which means we have to think a little bit, reflect, examine. The sociologist's dream, putting what's going on around us into a laboratory of examination that reveals the secrets and helps us to predict. So masonry, any way that we cut it, has evolved along with the culture. The language of the culture has changed. The meaning of the words has changed, as it always has. New words are being injected into our everyday usage, and others are discontinued. The classics prevail. But now we're raising questions about whether opera should be subsidized by government. And that's a question for you as a Mason to ask. Should the fine arts be subsidized? Are they important? Why not? They don't create a profit in the marketplace. Why not just let them go? Why do we need to subsidize schools of art anyway? Unless it can produce a profit, what bearing does it have? Philosophy, it's just that jibber-jabber. More business, that's what we need. More profit, that's what we need. More gain, that's what we're about. After all, isn't that the purpose? Any good merchant will tell you that. The mason has another sense of importance, of character. The masonry has, for some time, been the safe harbor of quality. How does a man achieve a quality of life? That he may or may not find stooped to his labor. By asking those incredibly interesting questions of why and how, who am I? Those questions that aren't so simple. But masonry also expects us to develop a contemplative mind, which simply means to be able to take control of our emotion, to think seriously about questions, to sort out importance. How would you hold the attention of hundreds of thousands of people? Now, I tend to think, like some of you, that initially masonry had the good fortune of being developed by very serious-minded men. Now, they were brought together by geography, and that allowed them to sit together and to organize as time went by. Initially, it was just sitting down for good company, good conversation. And then it became interesting conversation. And then it became in depth, but not every single time, perhaps. But the overall gain was evident. And you know what happens when you let a fool in the door and he's just disruptive. He talks on at length and has really nothing to add to the conversation. So all of a sudden he's imposing a task on everybody. Well, it may not be a task that's welcomed, particularly if people are there for some element, to engage some element of enlightenment. This is not enlightenment, it's considered intrusion. Good manners. But how do you keep that person at the door? Well, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. The work of it really is to maintain confidence that the sorting will happen naturally. That the serious conversations can continue, and those that can have the ability will enjoy and thrive, and those who can't won't. But therein, the fine print is where the devil is. How do you pick topics of relevance that have that sense of interest that are compelling in 2016? Remember in the Greek times, we're back about 400 BC, we're going to theater, we're hearing that a play is being put on. We have to keep in mind that most of the plays were only performed once. And the audience was first come, first serve. And great fist fights would break out in the crowds before the play was put on. Once, and then the remnants, the screenplay, the play itself would be kept, and we would find it later on. Our archaeologists would find it and report those stories to us and translate them to us. So that we began to develop a sense of the universal, the things that were compelling and interesting to people at that period in history were still essentially compelling to people today. And some have told us that the themes of all of her modern movies and theater can be found in the plays of the ancient Greeks. Well, we know about this because we were able to communicate that information. It's not to say that the Greeks were the only group. Perhaps Peloponnesians had great plays. But being able to communicate these ideas through history has become important to us. Oh, now this runs contrary to these notions of secrecy and privacy. Isn't it? How do we convey? Well, it was us that wanted things put down in writing. Remember, we are that group that conveyed our history and our learnings mouth to ear. Orally, we gave an oral history. Well, today, sadly, we only have scraps of information about a great priesthood, the Druids. All of their history was oral. Now, as the oldest, more august priests were the people that understood and had all of the history, all of it. So when you killed them off, when the Romans killed them off, of course, all that knowledge went with them. So now we have approximations, suppositions, the best we can. I don't fault people for that, do you? But we know that there was something very, very compelling and interesting about the priesthood, the Druid, because of some of the symbols that they left. Some things that tell us stories and tell us vital information about a time gone past. Communication became important, but then in order to thread the needle through the demagogues and despotism and general censorship and to not tamper with the uncontrolled power of church and state at the time. Church and state at a time held the power of life and death. Some would say they still do. But in the day, it became practical to play your cards close to your vest, as they say, to know how to be discreet, to learn to keep your mouth to be quiet, to be still, to not draw attention. It became necessary. Well, that lifestyle hasn't continued. In some places, it's still necessary. Some places in the world, it's still necessary to continue to meet. As much as government and as much as various popes would want to stamp out the Masonic order, when men have single-minded purpose, they are generally unstoppable. We have to address the reasons for that purpose. We have to think through it. We can't bomb it. We can't annihilate it, because the idea will still emerge. So here we walk through the corridors of time, feeling a great need for privacy, secrets. And yet, that has been overridden by our compelling need to communicate, to tell the world we were here, there, and we had something to say. So we keep records. Our records of my accomplishments within this order. We expect to communicate, but we have this other gnawing sense that we are giving up, that we're becoming too transparent. How odd is it that we discover, when we discover, that some of the most profound secrets of the Masonic order are visible, they're public, they're just not understood. Many, many lessons much of Freemasonry is like that. Wherein is the secret? The secret seems to lie more seriously in the fact that it takes the mind of a clever person to be still for a moment and ask why, and try and arrive at not only why, but the meaning. Now, is that secret? It's like we can tell you how to, we can put you in a trance-like state with different herbs and tell you that that's nirvana. Or you can contemplate, meditate, and train yourself. Which is the real? Is the Timothy Leary version of the, you know, the 60s and 70s scientist, the version of nirvana? Or is it Gandhi? Or Maharishi Mahesh Yoga? Which is the real? Well, they both are. They exist in that belt of ideas that orbits around us, like the rings of Saturn in a way. Large ideas, small ideas. Masonry resonates through that, and it gives us the opportunity to develop a perspective, a universal perspective in which we are the center, recognizing that every other individual is also the center of the universe. Let's pull back a little bit, take a breath. Just a little bit of something beautiful. This is Miles Davis. It's called So What. You've all heard this, I'm sure. we have to put up with. Curious. Miles Davis is no longer with us, but we can continue to listen to him and see him perform. We're playing with time, aren't we? Yep, we're playing with time. There's no question about it. So where do we go next? The next part is to talk about the novelty. To talk about how we maintained, how the order fed on new ideas. That's the feast that's brought to you and I. That's the true harmony. The feast of ideas. But it's not every man's taste. Having a good night where you can eat and drink and laugh. Well, that has an appeal all of its own, doesn't it? That sense of camaraderie, the party. Where politicians aren't likely to tread, where you're not going to get pontification, the great speechifying that is tedious, that just interrupts the fun, but where the fun, where the enjoyment, the pleasure of everybody there is going to be key. That's not where necessarily where great ideas are exchanged, but it can be and often is, but not necessarily. Strange things happen when men are at their ease, when they're done posturing, when they're done feeling they have to be muscular in a so-called male environment, where men can gather without feeling the need to compete. More academic is what we would call that. But that's a state of mind, isn't it? That's all that is. I think it's enormously complicated to try and hold people fascinated and have meetings every single month. I think that takes a tremendous amount of talent and effort. There is a tedium to the bureaucracy. Some places have avoided that by farming it out. They have separate section of meetings where all of that tedium, the domestic, is handled so that when the group meets, if that work is delegated to officers, perhaps, and it's handled properly, but it doesn't interfere with the time for goodwill and conversation. And some of the works that Freemasonry puts itself to. Rather, and I just say this because something has to change sometimes. And that something is our perspective. The evolution continues. We learn when we start to identify complications, then we'll start to identify solutions. We've already been doing that for a great long time. We've had Freemasonry, if you look historically, Wilmshurst, one of my favorite reads 10 years ago. I always thought he started off, my reaction to him was that he was complaining. He was a whiner. But then I realized he was reflecting the concerns of the day. Well, those concerns aren't much different than what we have to do, than many Masons have expressed to me over the past couple of years. Interesting that he's captured something. Now, that's not to say once you identify a problem that the solution comes immediately to mind. Some problems are more complicated than others. And some take a great deal of effort and trial and error, the scientific method, trial and error. But we need to be able to keep records. That's where we swing back to the importance of communication. I think the secret, the notion of secret has changed greatly since my grandfather's time. Until today. Discretion, on the other hand, hasn't changed. Being able to keep your wits about you and not to say too much in front of people, not to speak carelessly, that's nothing to do with our order. That's us. That's our task. That's our task. That's part of the deal, part of the requirement. We can look at our order as having some cracks and fissures, but truly, the order has remained firm. The Constitution has remained consistent, a framework of protections. What we examine, though, is human frailty. Oh, I was in a restaurant a bunch of years ago and saw somebody giving a Masonic sign in public. He was fairly new in the order, less than a year. But obviously his mentors, he had no sense. Quite happy, quite at his ease to do it. Now you and I might say, how many people in the room would understand what that was? Some people saw it because I witnessed it. It's hard not to. But every Mason in the room knew he had violated a trust, hadn't he? Now, how do we police and enforce these types of things? We park that information. That, in some sense, tells us more about the state of that man's thinking than anything, any argument he could bring to us. Anything. How we kept up, and I'm speaking as if Masonry around the globe is a singularity. I'm not convinced it is. I think it's quite an amazing, diverse, organic element, human element. We've searched out, and we continue to search out, intriguing ideas. We search out mystery, the unknown. And that's where the fun lies. That has great, great appeal. And in order to do that, we need to be aware of what's going on culturally. Well, if you're looking at expressions of cultural health, where do you turn for that information? Certainly not the gross national product. We want to know, are people starving in the streets? Do they have adequate shelter, clean and reliable source of water and food? That's important. That's important for survival. But the question was about our culture. Are we litigating ourselves into prisons? When you can't solve a problem, you come up with a law. I think, and you may agree, that we have to open up some dusty old books to look at how culture is defined, to find out those measures that tell us how things are moving along. The arts help define culture. When you and I think about cultures gone past and times gone past, we often turn to the various forms of art that were unique to those periods. As we are producing history today, 200 years from now, the young apprentice will be examining our work. Will he be examining our sense, our grasp of culture, whatever is unique about it, whatever is expressed about it, that will define us, define our purpose and our contribution to the order. So look around yourself and think about what are those indicators. Well, I would think the work of the poets, the work of the painters and sculptors certainly are incredibly important. Our musicians, our minstrels, the storytellers. Who tells those stories? Well, we're not sitting around the roadhouse in our leather pants and boots on a stormy night listening to somebody play a version of a guitar and singing songs a bit edgy about the king. But that same need, that same dilettante communication is amongst us. Where do we look for it? Well, where do we look for it in a way that's accessible? Well, for this information to be accessible, it has to speak to different generations all at the same time, different age groups, let's say. So the old man will need the something accessible in ways that are familiar to him. The young man has an emerging awareness, and he will need information portrayed that is comfortable to him and his cohort. So we need variations all the time. Variation is really important, is quite important. I think it's feasible to say that we've gone a little bit beyond novelty. Over a couple of hundred years, great ideas have been discovered. And the mystery of those ideas, some of the mystery of those ideas, are still with us. Still with us. I'll tell you a little bit about what I mean by that. Let's talk just a little bit about the Hermetic philosophies, if you don't mind, and the mystery that it's still left with. Oh, the motivation to answer that is like, why would a serious-minded man study alchemy today? Well, there's a lot of variations on the alchemist's laboratory that are taken very seriously and have been legitimated. That notion of turning base metals into gold, well, even that has a philosophical grind to it that needs to be investigated to be understood. Otherwise, it just seems ridiculous, doesn't it? Impossible. In the year 1460, a monk brought a Greek manuscript to Florence. The monk, we know his name, Leonardo de Pistoia, was one of the agents of the city's ruler, Cosimo de Medici. He was one of the great Medicis. They were a dynasty, but Cosimo was one of the greatest. He had sent Leonardo to scour Europe's monasteries for forgotten writings of the ancients. And what he now brought his patron was a codex containing 14 treatises attributed to an ancient Egyptian sage, Hermes Trismegistus. This work's arrival caused a tremendous stir because Hermes, identified with the Ibis god Thoth, or Thoth, was held to be older than Plato and Moses and the underlying inspiration of all philosophy and religion that followed him. Keep that in mind as we go on with this story. Cosimo immediately instructed his scholar, Marsilio Ficino, to suspend his project of translating the complete dialogues of the divine Plato so that he might undertake a translation of this even more significant work. Imagine, he pulled his scholar off the work of translating Plato. This manuscript contained the nucleus of the Corpus Hermeticum, also falsely called a Primander, because the first treatise was Primandres, along with some astrological and alchemical works also named after Hermes. These tracts became the fundamental writings of the Renaissance. That part got my attention too. Together, they were called the Hermeticism. Whereas the doctrine of the Corpus Hermeticum is called Hermeticism, The texts of the corpus are preserved in Greek and appear to have been produced between the 1st and 3rd centuries AD in, of all places, Alexandria, Egypt. In 1614, the Swiss Calvinist from Geneva, Casaubon, proved that the Corpus Hermeticum was not as old as it pretended to be, but should be dated after the beginning of the Christian era. After this, Hermetic writings lost their general fascination, but they lived on in secret societies, such as the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians. Remember, we're looking at 17th century now. The discovery of Hermetic writings in one of the 13 codices found near Nag Hammadi in Egypt in 1945 changed this situation completely, the situation where the interest in the Corpus Hermeticum, the writings, was lost. The lost word, in Egypt in 1945, they found one of the 13 codices contained a better version in Coptic, ancient language, of parts of the Hermetic Asclepius, preserved in Latin among the works of Apuleius. And moreover, the integral text of an unknown writing called On the Ogdad and Inyet. This work shows without any doubt that the Hermetic believer was initiated in several grades before transcending the sphere of the seven planets and the heaven of the fixed stars, the Ogdoad. That's O-G-D-O-A-D. Then he would behold the God beyond and experience himself. It is now completely certain that there existed before and after the beginning of the Christian era in Alexandria, a secret society akin to a Masonic lodge. The members of this group called themselves brethren, were initiated through a baptism of the Spirit, greeted each other with a sacred kiss, and celebrated the sacred meal and read the Hermetic writings as edifying treatises for their spiritual progress. Moreover, the criticism of Casaubon lost much of their force. For even if the Corpus Hermeticum was written down rather late, its concepts could easily be very old and Egyptian. And in fact, the basic principles of emanation of the world as an overflow from God and man as a ray of sunlight, all is one, all is from the one, are typically ancient Egyptian. Nor should the influence of esoteric Judaism be neglected. There existed at that time in Alexandria and Palestine a throne mysticism in which the initiated rose through the seven palaces of heaven to behold the Kabod, the luminous glory of God in the shape of a man. This mysticism was inspired by the vision of Ezekiel 1, a throne carried by four living beings, above which a figure like the appearance of a man, still today the foundation of all Jewish mysticism, about Adam Qedmon, archetypal man. In the Poemides, God brings forth the Anthropos, man who descends to create and falls into matter. That echoes the main theme of esoteric Judaism. But in the century before Christ, the influential Stoic philosopher Posidonius, taught that the cosmos was dominated by the sympathy of all things, stars and events on earth. That God was a spirit which pervaded the all, and that man was consubstantial with God because he had a spirit. At the same time, a certain Erdős, a Platonist, was teaching in Alexandria, stressing the religious elements like reincarnation in Plato and trying to reconcile Plato with Aristotle. Hermetus, followed these figures in using philosophic language to express fundamentally religious teachings. And thus, Hermetic studies have been completely renewed. Therefore, the time has come for a new translation which seeks the Greek text in the light of new discoveries and finds an adequate wording in a modern idiom not tainted by the prejudices of old-fashioned rationalism. I want to thank Professor Emeritus Giles Quispel of Utrecht and Harvard for that. The heart of the Hermetic teaching. So just when we answer and when we subscribe to one set of mysteries, and I say that they come in sets, we can add to it. Now think back in the day when this was discovered. This material was discovered 17th century, and then it was revised with new findings in the 20th century, 1946. And then there was a renewed interest. Yeah? Something was revived. So that notion of Renaissance has been with us. Only those waves of energy and knowledge were very far apart. Now those wave sets are coming closer and closer and closer together. All of science is being redoubled, every 9 years? Knowledge is being redoubled at an accelerating rate. That's a good thing. That's what we set about to do, to learn. And we're darn good at it. And we train the very best minds. And oh my goodness, does it take effort? Yes. But is it possible? Well, of course. Even today, we have problems around the world that we can't quite solve, but we'll get there. We'll get there. It's a matter of time, isn't it? Is that arrogance? Is that or is it what I call the audaciousness of groups like Freemasons? Men who feed off the novelty of these mysteries, who chase them, just like storm chasers, to see what there is to learn, to add to common knowledge. It's been interesting and fun having you here today. I look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for joining us in Masonic Effects. Here's a little Duke Ellington, one of my favorites. I think you'll like it. Satin Doll. Be sure to commit those acts of random kindness. And keep yourself in the shadows there, good Mason.